Hello, this is Mike Freiberg, Chair of the House Preventive Health Policy Division. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting to order. The first item of business, the clerk, Ms. Somick, will take the roll for attendance purposes.
Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Bierman. Representative Grünhagen.
Present.
Representative Akam. Representative Igbaje.
Present.
Representative Ackland. Representative Carlson.
Carlson present.
Representative Franzen.
Present.
Representative Heinzman.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Bierman. Representative Akam. Representative Ackland. Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Somick. Normally I would call on Vice Chair Bierman to move the minutes, but he's not here at this point. Is there a member who would like to move the approval of the minutes of the March 3rd meeting of this division?
I'll move minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative Pryor. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the minutes are adopted. So the first item on the agenda is House File 1721, Representative Schultz's bill. So I will move to re-refer House File 1721 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Division. Representative Schultz, I think you also have an amendment, the A1 amendment. Did you want to discuss the bill first or discuss the amendments? Just let me know what your preference is and I can move the amendment when you are ready.
I will do either. So I think it might be better to move the amendment first.
Okay, why don't you explain briefly? So I will move the A1 amendment. This would put the bill in the shape you'd like it. If you could just briefly explain what it does, that would be helpful. Sure.
The amendment adds an appropriation of $10 million to the School of Public Health. And I will talk more about that as we explain the bill.
Okay, is there any questions to the amendment? Okay, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. So, Chair Schultz, please present your bill.
Well, thank you and good morning, members and Chair Freiberg. Thank you for hearing this bill. House File 1721 is a comprehensive approach to our state tobacco taxes and invests in tobacco prevention. This bill specifically increases the price of tobacco products and dedicates a small portion of cigarette tax revenue to tobacco prevention and treatment, and per my amendment, the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. Specifically, this bill does the following. It increases the excise tax on a pack of cigarettes by $1.50, bringing the total excise tax on a pack of cigarettes to $4.54, increases the tax rate on other tobacco products, such as e-cigarettes and chew, from 95% of the wholesale price to 97%. It appropriately applies the other tobacco products tax to e-cigarette devices. Currently, these devices are not taxed as a tobacco product. It increases the premium cigar tax cap from 50 cents to $5 per cigar. It conforms our laws around online sales of e-cigarettes and tobacco products to recent federal changes, and it dedicates $15 million of cigarette tax revenues to the Minnesota Department of Health for tobacco prevention and treatment, and $10 million to the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. As a health economist, I truly understand that prevention not only saves lives, but it also has cost savings from reduced healthcare utilization. Commercial tobacco use is one of the most stubborn and costly addictions that we face in Minnesota. Every year, Minnesota loses 6,300 residents and $7 billion to smoking. Over the past few decades, Minnesota has made giant strides toward lowering smoking rates and preventing youth tobacco use. But our work is not over. Today, our adult smoking rates have stalled at 14% and remain high in communities targeted by big tobacco. Among our kids, youth cigarette smoking has hit record lows, but the e-cigarette epidemic has erased progress to build a smoke-free generation. The Minnesota Department of Health recently released a report on youth tobacco, which found that youth tobacco rates remain at epidemic levels. One in five high schoolers used e-cigarettes in the past month. And for the first time, the survey included an item that measured nicotine dependence, and it found that 7 in 10 youth who vape are showing signs of nicotine dependence. We need to do more to reduce smoking and youth tobacco use, and this bill will do that, starting with raising the price. Economic research shows that price increases are effective in reducing smoking. Decades of data from Minnesota and throughout the world tell us that when it comes to helping people quit and preventing youth smoking, a tax is a powerful tool. Price is the most powerful factor, but it's not the only one. That's why this bill also provides much needed funding for youth prevention, partnerships, and quit tobacco treatment. As part of the 1998 tobacco settlement, Clearway Minnesota was created. They have provided the vast majority of tobacco prevention and treatment funding in our state. They will sunset at the end of this year, leaving a significant funding gap. Tobacco taxes and settlement fees are a large source of revenue in Minnesota. Last year alone, Minnesota collected over $700 million in tobacco revenues. Yet the state only spent about 1% of that total on tobacco prevention and treatment. Investing $15 million a year in tobacco prevention and treatment would mean that instead of just spending one penny of every dollar on tobacco revenue on prevention, we would spend about 2 to 3 pennies. The state will realize a large return on this investment. A research study from Health Partners Institute and Clearway Minnesota found that continuing tobacco prevention investments at the same or higher levels will save Minnesota more than 14,000 lives and $10 billion in health costs. Few other investments would make such a profound positive impact. I want to close by mentioning that this proposal works in concert with Representative Morrison's three bills to invest in tobacco prevention and treatment, and the goal of the different approaches is to provide the legislature with options for how to invest additional dollars in prevention efforts. Minnesota needs a comprehensive tobacco tax increase, and no matter how we fund it, we must invest in life-saving tobacco prevention efforts. I want to thank Clearway Minnesota for all the work they've done on prevention and cessation in smoking.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. I believe you have an author's testifier, Ms. Moylanen from Clearway. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and members. My name is Molly Moylanen, and I am Vice President of Clearway Minnesota, an independent nonprofit working to reduce tobacco's harm. I co-chair Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation, a coalition of more than 60 organizations committed to ending youth tobacco addiction, and I'm also a constituent of Representative Patty Acorn. As Representative Schultz mentioned, Clearway was created as a limited-life, independent nonprofit working to reduce commercial tobacco use in our state. We will sunset at the end of this year. We are glad to see this bill address two pillars of tobacco prevention, price and funding. We support increasing tobacco prices because they are the top driver of smoking declines. Our own state's data has contributed to the existing evidence base. Since 1993, 53% of smoking reductions in Minnesota have come from price increases alone. Minnesota's last major tobacco price increase was in 2013. The year after the tax increase, 60% of Minnesota smokers made a quit attempt, and 15.6% of all Minnesota smokers successfully quit. These results and the health benefits that accompany lower incidence of smoking are realized most in groups that historically smoke at higher rates, and high prices prevent youth from ever starting. Minnesota's cigarette tax hasn't appreciably changed in 8 years, and a price increase is overdue. Furthermore, now is the time to end the tax break on premium cigars, tax e-cigarette devices as a tobacco product. This is very important considering the current youth e-cigarette epidemic. It will also conform to federal e-cigarette online sales rules to help our state keep pace with the ever-evolving tobacco industry. Now, that tobacco industry is constantly looking for ways to manipulate product definitions and tax rates to get new people addicted to dangerous products. In 2017, the industry succeeded and Minnesota slashed cigar taxes by 85%. This bill ends that special treatment of cigars. The bottom line is this: stagnant tobacco prices only benefit the tobacco industry and their profits. This bill will have an even greater health impact because it dedicates a fraction of tobacco revenue to cessation and prevention. For the past 20 years, Clearway has led a comprehensive effort to prevent commercial tobacco use through educational campaigns, research, free quit smoking help, and community partnerships. The legislature has been a strong bipartisan partner in these efforts, passing smoke-free air, funding quit smoking services, and most recently, Tobacco 21. As we at Clearway Minnesota reach our sunset, tobacco remains a threat, especially when it comes to the youth e-cigarette epidemic and racial disparities. The COVID-19 pandemic adds urgency to these efforts, since current and former smokers are at increased risk for severe illness from COVID. Raising tobacco prices and securing sustainable tobacco prevention funding, no matter how we do it, will create a healthier future for Minnesota. We are grateful to Representative Schultz, Representative Morrison, and lawmakers in both parties and chambers for exploring a number of possible solutions this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moylanen. We'll turn now to public testimony. I think I'm going to start with the people who emailed us asking to speak in opposition to the bill and then go to the supporters. I misspoke before the meeting started. I spoke to one of the testifiers and told her she would be going 11th. I think I misunderstood the order we were taking these in. So she will actually be going 6th and not 11th, just so you're aware of that. So, testifiers have been asked to keep their remarks to 2 minutes. We don't have somebody timing us, so I may, if it goes beyond 2 minutes, I may cut in and just let you know that the time has expired. So you can still wrap things up in a couple sentences after that, but you may hear from me at that point. So the first testifier we have that will be speaking is Richard Marianos, and after Richard Marianos will be Mike Smith. So Mr. Marianos, if you could please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time. My name is Rich Marianos. I'm the retired assistant director with ATF. Currently, I'm a professor at Georgetown University and a member of the IACP and the Police Executive Research Forum. I'm testifying in opposition to this bill because I think there's other ways that we can hunt this demon and some of these predators that are causing some of these problems, and also trying to advise you of the dangers that we may create crime by increasing the taxes. Prohibition and large tax increases don't work. They haven't worked, and they continue to not work, as I saw when I was the assistant director at ATF. If we look at the model in New York as they've increased taxes along the eastern seaboard, there is a tax loss due to criminal activity to approximately $10 billion a year. And I just want to tell Representative Schultz that I applaud the good job you're doing in terms of looking out for the younger adults in this, because they are the victims, without a doubt. And some of the things I wanted to make sure that I discuss in my short two-minute proffer is, as combustible cigarette smoking is down, there is an increase in the vapor category, but it's an increase in the vapor category with some of the more predator companies that are producing open systems that allow young adults to put in whatever flavors they can buy over the internet, or they can buy at some of these shops. And there's other ways to, excuse the expression, skin this cat, by concentrating our efforts instead of attacks, but going after the real criminals that are putting these things on the street. I just read an article this morning that the FDA doesn't have the resources right now to investigate or go after some of these people that are selling some of these counterfeit products. But a small adjustment in your law enforcement resources could help this situation, make it quite lucrative for your state budget in education, training, and resources in that arena. Finally, what I want to say is be cautious, and I'll leave you out on this, is right now Minnesota has some of the highest crime rates in the United States. Some cities are 250% higher than the rest of the United States. Don't create a situation where the police are working something that they don't need to. Senseless ordinances, senseless violations where they need to serve and protect. We don't need them investigating nuisance ordinances and creating problems among the community rather than trying to fix it. Thank you so much for your time. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Mike Smith, and after Mike Smith will be Thomas Bryant. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Smith, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Mike Smith. I'm a second-generation owner of Granite City Jobby, a family wholesale business located in St. Cloud. House File 1721 would increase the state's sale tax on cigarettes to an extreme level of $4.54 a pack, which would be the highest in the nation. Such a tax rate would expand the already existing illicit market in cigarettes and cause significant state sales reductions in our retail store accounts, especially those near the state borders. The downturn in sales would put employees' jobs at risk and family-owned retail stores in jeopardy. This is a reality because convenience stores rely on cigarette and tobacco sales for 36% of their in-store sales. Without gas sales at the pump and cigarette and tobacco sales inside the store, the business model for convenience store fails. So when you deliberate on House File 1721, consider the mental health of employees and store owners who are considered essential workers and have been on the front lines making sure people can buy gas and other grocery products during this pandemic. If they are faced with layoffs and store closures, their mental health will decline and public health will be negatively impacted. I urge you not to support House 1721. Thanks for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Thomas Bryant, and after Thomas Bryant is David Bears. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bryant. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Tom Bryant, and I represent the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association. Public health and public safety are intertwined public policies. They are not mutually exclusive. Laws are meant to protect not only the public health, but also the public safety. A public health approach to public safety should promote strategies to reduce factors that put people at risk for experiencing violence and increase factors that protect them from risk. However, the cigarette and tobacco tax increases in House File 1721 will promote violence in the form of store robberies. Yesterday, I sent to the committee a security camera picture of a machete-wielding, gun-carrying criminal in the act of robbing a Denver, Colorado store of cigarettes. Thankfully, no one was hurt. But since Colorado raised its cigarette tax as of January 1st of this year, the state is experiencing retail store robberies weekly, where the criminals are not after the cash in the register, but rather the high-valued cigarette inventory. At a $4.54 per pack cigarette tax as proposed in the bill, Minnesota would have the highest cigarette tax rate in the country. This high tax rate will result in significant expansion of the current illicit market for cigarettes in Minnesota and could lead to a rise in store robberies. This would place store employees who have been essential workers during the pandemic at risk of personal harm. These tax rates will not protect the public health, but provide the motive for criminals to steal cigarettes and tobacco products and put law-abiding retailers and their employees in harm's way. I understand that lawmakers need to balance public health and public safety policies, but a policy of enacting the highest tax rates in the nation will be consequential to and not to the benefit of the public health. For these reasons, we urge you not to support House File 1721. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is David Bears, and after Mr. Bears will be Michael Madden. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bears. Sorry, it's my timer. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bears. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Let's see, maybe he is not here. Looking through the names on the screen. I don't see him. It looks like Dr. Madden is getting ready. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Madden. You will be next, and after Dr. Madden will be Kelly Jansen. Welcome to the committee. Dr. Madden, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael Madden. I'm a physician and former chief medical officer of a multi-state Medicaid company. I have decades of experience implementing at the organizational and patient level programs addressing critical public health concerns like opioid addiction, HIV, and smoking. Reynolds International has compensated me for my time today, but the opinions expressed are my own. And I've also submitted written testimony, which has much more detail and references for my remarks, as I think some may be challenging. I speak in opposition to the portion of HF 1721 that further increases the state's already nation-leading tax on nicotine vapor products. And I urge you to reflect science-backed tobacco harm reduction in the state's tobacco taxation structure. Smokers die prematurely, not because they consume nicotine, which is not a carcinogen, but because of how they consume it from smoke. The FDA has recognized there is a risk continuum across nicotine-containing products, and public health researchers estimate that e-cigarettes are 90% less harmful than cigarettes. Keeping tobacco products out of the hands of Minnesota's youth must be balanced with the proven benefit of tobacco harm reduction for the state's current 600,000 adult smokers. But research funded by the NIH and published last year by the National Bureau of Economic Research indicates that tax hikes on vapor products actually increase cigarette sales. And data from the New England Journal showed that those who quit cigarettes using vaping are twice as likely to remain smoke-free a year later as those who use nicotine replacement products. All commercial vapor products are currently under review by the FDA, and only those that can demonstrate to that federal agency a net public health benefit will remain on the market. Solid health policy should include a tax reduction on vapor or tobacco products approved under this process or the agency's modified risk tobacco product process. As a family physician, I care for the health needs of teens and their parents, and I hope you will as well. Make tobacco harm reduction financially appealing to adults by lowering the taxes on safer products, not raising them. Thank you very much. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Kelly Jansen, and after Kelly, we will turn to the supportive testifiers, starting with Dr. Mark Steffen. So welcome to the committee, Ms. Jansen. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me? Okay, perfect. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Kelly Jansen, and I'm the president of Henry's Foods, a full-line wholesaler located in Alexandria, Minnesota. House File 1721 would enact the highest tax rate for cigarettes, cigars, moist snuff, and electronic cigarettes in the country. While Minnesota is currently ranked as the fifth highest state for cigarette smuggling, increasing the tax to $4.54 per pack will make current inbound cigarette smuggling and cross-border purchases even worse. The Mackinac Center for Public Policy's study on cigarette smuggling concludes that 36% of all cigarettes smoked in Minnesota are obtained from sources outside the state. Why does Minnesota have such a high rate of cigarette smuggling? It's because of the difference in cigarette tax rates. Of the $1.50 cigarette tax increase, if it's enacted, Minnesotans would save $41 on a carton of cigarettes if they went to North Dakota, $30 in South Dakota, almost $32 in Iowa, and more than $20 in Wisconsin. How is that helping our Minnesota retailers? These different tax rates would put wholesalers and their Minnesota retail accounts at a severe competitive disadvantage than other states. That is, rather than the state providing economic assistance to retail businesses, which we've heard in the news significantly lately, these tax increases would cause economic devastation. Then, the public health consequences of such economic devastation to jobs and businesses would be felt by many employees and business owners. So for these reasons, we urge you to not increase taxes on cigarettes and tobacco products. Thank you for your time and have a great day.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Dr. Mark Steffen, and after Dr. Steffen will be Bethlehem Uhalawirk. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Steffen. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. I see your name. It looks like you're unmuted, but I cannot hear you. Okay, well, why don't we go ahead to Bethlehem Uhalawirk, and if Dr. Steffen has not figured out his audio issues, Elizabeth Heimer will be next. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, thank you, Chair Freiberg and committee members. My name is Bethlehem Uhalawirk, and I am a program specialist at North Point Health and Wellness Center, which brings health and human services to individuals and families in North Minneapolis. I'm here to express our concern about our community's health and to ask you to increase the price of commercial tobacco and invest in prevention. I don't stand here alone. In fact, I represent a group of individuals from targeted communities. I say targeted communities because African, Black, American Indian, Asian American and Pacific Islanders, Latinx, and the LGBT communities are all targeted by tobacco companies. There's no question, greater use and addiction exists and persists because of the industry's history of marketing and promotion of tobacco products in our communities. The rates of tobacco-related death and disease are also disproportionately high for us. For example, African Americans have the highest death rate and shortest survival rate for most cancers. Black people are 53% more likely to die from heart disease, which is the top smoking-related disease. And COVID-19 also disproportionately affects the Black community and has worse effects on smokers. This shows us the compounding effects of these deadly disparities. The truth is the tobacco industry spends over $100 million per year in Minnesota marketing their products to attract and retain customers. Higher tobacco prices are the best way to break this cycle, a cycle that only benefits the tobacco industry while the rest of us pay with devastating consequences. I urge you to support these higher prices and especially to pair them with increased investments in youth prevention, cessation programs, community partnerships, and robust research and evaluation. Together, they will provide the best possible disruption of the industry's grip of addiction. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Elizabeth Heimer, and after Elizabeth Heimer will be Eric Lee. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and committee members. My name is Liz Heimer, and I represent the American Lung Association in Minnesota. I'm also a constituent of Representative Ackland, and I'm here to strongly support HF 1721. We've all seen the devastating effects of tobacco addiction. The longer it goes on, the harder it is to stop. And the consequences start adding up: heart attack, stroke, lung disease, disability, cancer, the list goes on. But every time the price of cigarettes goes up, people quit. By far the most common reason smokers give up quitting is, I couldn't afford it anymore. As you've heard, price hikes encourage people who smoke to get help. And high tobacco prices are a preventative factor for youth. Including e-cigarette devices with the proposed increase is also wise. E-cigarettes are not approved for tobacco treatment by the FDA, and more than any other individual tobacco product, they attract and introduce kids to nicotine. And nicotine is addictive and harmful to the developing brain. This year, the American Lung Association gave Minnesota an F for tobacco prevention and treatment funding in our annual report card. That's why it's so critical this bill dedicates a portion of new tobacco revenue to prevention, education, treatment, and community-tailored interventions to better support populations who've been targeted by the tobacco industry marketing for decades. Finally, a recent report from the National Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids found Minnesota fell from the 14th to the 20th among U.S. states in tobacco prevention and funding. Today, we spend less than North Dakota and South Dakota in terms of CDC's recommendations. I think we can all agree that Minnesota can do better. We need to prevent addiction before it starts, and price and funding are two of the most powerful tools we have, because if no one starts, smoking stops. Thank you, and I urge you to support this bill.
Thank you. The next testifier is Eric Lee, and after Eric Lee is Caitlin DeVos. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Cool. Can everyone hear me? Hi. Good afternoon, Chair Friedberg and members. My name is Eric Lee, and I'm a sophomore at Egan High School. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Youth Council, which is a diverse group of 36 high school students who are representatives of each congressional district in Minnesota. We help bring the voice of youth to lawmakers and strive towards equity in various areas that affect youth across the state. I'm glad to be here today to support Representative Schultz's bold tobacco tax changes. E-cigarettes are a big problem in high schools and even in middle schools. Before the pandemic, our bathrooms became vape rooms. Students would also vape during class when the teacher wasn't looking. It's easy to hide vaping devices in your sleeve or collar. The tobacco industry even makes vaping devices that are wearable and harder to detect, like vapes in watches or in sweaters. At our age, we want to fit in, and we're curious about new things. We have been told that smoking is bad for students, but e-cigarettes are perceived differently. People think it's cool or a status thing to vape. Once students are hooked on e-cigarettes, it's more likely to distract them from class, sports, clubs, and even a job. Smoking and vaping takes a toll on our futures before serious health problems start showing up. I was once at a party for a school club and a teammate's home, and one of my teammates asked if I wanted to vape. I was shocked that this teammate would vape in a friend's house while their parents were home. Not only this, but because of his addiction, out of desperation to charge his vape, I watched him as he took out an Apple charger and ripped off the tip of the charger and used the wires to create a makeshift charger, even though that was extremely dangerous and could shock him. This showed the lengths that students my age would go to satisfy their addiction. Thank you for hearing me today and for standing up for the kids. The legislature should use all the tools available to prevent the next generation of addiction and help people quit, including raising the price of and investing in youth prevention. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier is Caitlin DeVos, and after that, we will see if Dr. Steffen's audio issues have been resolved. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Caitlin DeVos. I am a Lakeville resident and a constituent of Representative Bierman. I am also a volunteer for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and I have committed much of my life to the fight against cancer. When I was 19, I lost my mom to colon cancer, learning early in life the toll that cancer can take on a family. I put college on hold to be there for her, and cancer caused our family agonizing emotional and financial stress. I'm not the only person in my family to experience the premature death of a parent. My dad did too. His father was a heavy smoker. My dad remembers listening to his father's rasping cough at night. My grandpa died in his 60s to a heart attack that was caused in large part due to his heavy smoking, and he was only able to hold me once. We know that all tobacco products, including cigars, are addictive and cause disease and death. Nearly one-third of all cancer deaths are caused by smoking. Cigar smokers are 4 to 10 times more likely to die from laryngeal, oral, or esophageal cancers than non-smokers. The American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, or ACS-CAN, is well known for standing up to the tobacco industry with positions that are driven by evidence and science. ACS-CAN and the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids estimate that a $1.50 per pack increase would lead to major health gains, including 13,200 fewer kids becoming adult smokers, 24,300 adult smokers quitting, and $800 million in long-term health savings. Your yes vote today can help in the fight against cancer. We know that tobacco taxes and tobacco prevention and treatment programs improve the health of Minnesotans and help other families to hear from hearing the words, "You have cancer." Cancer and tobacco have impacted my life and countless other families across this state. These losses can be prevented. I ask that you vote yes on House File 1721.
Thank you for your testimony. Dr. Steffen, I see you've... It looks like your audio might be working.
Yep.
Committee, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members, and I apologize for the delay. My name is Mark Steffen. I'm a physician, and I also have my master's in public health. I serve as the chief medical officer of Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota, where we've long been a leader in fighting big tobacco. Today, I want to stress for you the costs of smoking. not just in terms of health, which are well known, but also in terms of the financial cost to all of us, whether we smoke or not. This is something that Blue Cross has studied extensively. 4 years ago, we put out a report called Healthcare Costs in Smoking in Minnesota, the Bottom Line. Our report found that despite decreases in smoking, the cost to Minnesotans remains significant. Annually, smoking is responsible for $3.19 billion in excess medical expenditures. That's a per capita expense of $593 for every person in the state. Additionally, we know smoking adds cost to employers. Employees who smoke cost self-insured employers an additional $5,800 annually. These costs focus on cigarette smoking, and our study doesn't even include the costs Minnesotans bear from cigars, chew, or e-cigarettes. We know these products have a negative impact on health. There are currently 3.6 million youth using e-cigarettes in the U.S., including thousands in Minnesota, and we truly don't know the future costs that might bring. Finally, not all Minnesotans bear this burden equally. Low-income individuals experience significantly higher rates of smoking and smoking-related health issues. People with a mental illness or substance use disorder smoke at rates that are almost double that of the general population, and other communities as a direct result of targeting by big tobacco are especially hard hit by commercial tobacco disparities. Consider the American Indian population in Minnesota, which has a smoking rate of 59%. That's compared to a rate of 14% in the general population. Raising prices and investing in prevention is a part of a comprehensive approach that will reduce tobacco use and help lower these costs for the state and for all Minnesotans. I urge you to support the proposal. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. So testifiers, you're welcome to, that's okay. So that's the end of the people I have who have signed up to testify. Is there any member discussion? Maybe while I'm waiting. Okay, sure. Representative Franson, looks like you're first. Oops, I muted as well. We're both
okay.
Muted.
Am I good now?
You're good now. Thank you.
Okay. So thank you, Mr. Chair members. I find it extremely interesting that we are once again moving to raise taxes on the middle class and those poor on the cigarette taxes. This was done in 2011 under Governor Dayton. But I find it really interesting that the bill author also supports the legalization of marijuana, which I find that kind of hypocritical, including candy flavors, you know, the edibles that are going to come with the legalization of marijuana. So I just find it very hypocritical because children, students, you're going to be running into the same issue, kids using marijuana, eating the gummies and all the other things that they can make out of this product. But I do have a question for the Clearway testifier, if she's available.
Ms. Moylanen, yes, looks like she is available.
Thanks, Ms. Moylanen. Does Clearway have a position on the legalization of marijuana?
Cannabis bill is not before us, but I will allow a little leeway here. So just if you could keep your answer brief, Ms. Moylanen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Franzen. Our organization has a court-ordered mission to focus on reducing the harm caused by commercial tobacco use. We do not work on other issues like cannabis, opioids, alcohol, or other substances. As such, we do not have a formal position on cannabis legalization. We are watching the science for areas where tobacco and marijuana intersect. That said, reducing tobacco's harm remains the focus of our organization for our remaining months. We sunset pending court order at the end of this year.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Schultz, did you have any comments to any of those points?
I am a little offended at Representative Franson's comment about me being hypocritical about supporting the regulation. I mean, cannabis is already being used. The bill regulates cannabis. People are going to continue using it like they do today, but hopefully it'll be safer. And I'm not opposed to taxing cannabis. So just because I support legalizing cannabis doesn't mean I don't want to tax or regulate it to make sure it's safe.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. I think it's a positive thing that we're talking about the issue. We're talking about the damage that cigarettes cause. That's not necessarily a problem. I think this committee needs to have those kinds of conversations. That's great. But there really is an issue as it relates to hypocrisy. And I understand that the bill author is offended that that's brought up, but it's glaring. And I think that it has to be discussed. And I'm glad that the chair allowed the question, because we're wondering, where are the organizations on the legalization of marijuana? And of course, along with it comes all of the products that are targeted specifically at children, whether it be gummies or candy flavors and so on and so forth. And so it does seem very hypocritical that while we're trying to tax, which I think that the bill author referred to taxes as a very powerful tool, while we're trying to use that to dissuade people who typically don't have the money to afford their addiction in the first place, we're now pushing a regressive tax. I'm not sure that that's the right approach, especially while trying to legalize recreational use marijuana. So, I just want to point out that it's a very reasonable conversation to add to this conversation, and I'm glad that we're able to bring that up, and I appreciate the chair's allowing that conversation to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're muted, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any comments, Representative Schultz?
I'm not here to discuss cannabis, so bring me back and we can discuss that bill, Chair Freiberg.
Fair enough. Since the issue has come up too about the flavors, I have heard the author of that, the cannabis bill, say that he is interested in discussing flavors when it comes to a health committee, and would potentially consider adding one on. I think there's definitely merit to having that discussion as well, so that the products are treated comparably. Representative Grunhagen, I think you were next, then Representative Bierman and Pryor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, I did vote to increase the age of tobacco to 21. I do think we need to regulate and at times tax addictive products. However, I did find the testimony of the opponents of this increase quite compelling. There is a point where you raise taxes on what is a legal substance that it creates an underground movement, and even in some cases, crime. I think you see people leaving the state of Minnesota to purchase their tobacco, as was testified. So it gives me pause on this to continue to increase taxes as the only means, or as the primary means of trying to deter. I understand. I used to be addicted to cigarettes. When I was in the Marine Corps, I got addicted to them, and it took me quite a while, the Lord willing, to be able to quit with a little help from my wife, which I didn't always appreciate. But now I'm very thankful that I had quit years ago. So I guess at this point, do you find some of the issues, Representative Schultz? And I know you're well-intended, okay? Although I do wonder why you're signed on as a co-author to a cannabis bill, but I won't say anything about that. But do you find some of the testimony in opposition to this in terms of creating an underground sale of these cigarettes, pushing people to go to other states, maybe even ordering online. I'm not sure if the tax would apply online. I haven't completely read the bill. But do you find any of their points well taken in terms of increasing this tax?
Thank you for mostly keeping to the topic at hand, Representative Grunhagen, the topic of tobacco. I appreciate the question, too. I was actually, no one else did. I was interested in hearing a little bit more about the arguments about potential black market and so forth. I know that gets raised a lot in the tobacco tax context. So Representative Schultz or maybe Ms. Moilanen, well, would you like to discuss that a little bit?
Sure, I can start and Ms. Moilanen can finish. But, you know, I think that claim about smuggling and crime is very much exaggerated. And Minnesota does a really good job with the cigarette tax stamp system at limiting illicit sales. And we have very steep penalties for contraband. And, you know, my husband's a criminologist. He's never brought me evidence about taxes on cigarettes creating more crime or increasing crime rates. And I also want to know, you know, the testifiers should really note there if they have any affiliation financially or otherwise to tobacco industry. We should know that as committee members who they're speaking for and who they're representing.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Ms. Moilanen?
I would just add, Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen, your question to follow up on Representative Schultz's notes is absolutely right around the illicit sales there, in that there, sure, there is some, but it is an exaggerated claim by the tobacco industry. And what is parallel to this is that Minnesota has lower smoking rates than our border states. So when you talk about overall cost savings to the state, having a higher tax rate will result in lower healthcare costs because our smoking rate is lower as well than those bordering states. And when it comes to where we want to be, I want to be at the top of the list for having a lower smoking rate. In terms of your question for online sales, this bill does bring into our state into conformity with federal law that passed earlier at the end of 2020. And so that will take care of that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moilanen. We do have another bill on the agenda, and I see members' hands going up. So just to note, I'd like to have this one voted on by 11:30. So Representative Bierman, you were next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks to Ms. Moilanen for all of her work in being laser-focused on reducing tobacco usage in Minnesota. Really appreciate that good work. And as the testifiers, I want to just thank the testifiers as well. Their testimony was great, just to remind us of the severe costs of tobacco smoking, not just to the people smoking, but to all of us. Just the fact that a third of cancer deaths, as Ms. DeVos pointed out, are directly attributable to smoking. And Dr. Steffens pointing out the costs, not just to the smokers, but for the state and for us to have to deal with that. As individuals, as taxpayers, as business owners, I just think that we have to take the actions that are effective, and I want to thank the author for bringing the bill forward. I think conflating this issue with the marijuana issue is a red herring, and I know obviously the marijuana issue is going to come for us all, and so we'll have that debate, but I think staying focused on the issue of tobacco is what this bill is about. And thanks for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to Representative Schultz for allowing us to hear this bill, which I think is central to our mission here as a preventive health committee. One thing I'm interested in to hear more about and understand better is that when we're talking about taxation, our interest is not so much as raising revenue for the state, but to shape behavior by reducing, by raising the cost and thereby reducing the amount of tobacco products that are being purchased and reducing addiction, especially in young people, where I know from my experience in the health committee, huge concern in our high schools and in our middle schools about the number of young people that are now using vaping products. So my question is actually to hear more about the taxation on vaping products and where we stand on that right now. And since we were saying back in 2011 was the last time we increased these kinds of taxes, and that vaping really started since then. So could I just want to hear again information about how we are using taxation to discourage the use of tobacco products and how that relates to vaping.
Representative Schultz, would you like to handle this or would you like Ms. Moylanen to respond?
I'll just make a comment and then have Moylanen respond. But, you know, I visited my high school 2 years ago, one of the high schools in my district, and they showed me on the table of all of the vaping devices that were confiscated, it was hundreds of devices. And that was just over, you know, a few weeks. So it is definitely a crisis of vaping among young adults and our youth that we need to prevent. And taxes are very effective at preventing that because young people are very sensitive to price. And so if you can increase the price for them, they're going to not hopefully not start vaping. But I'll let Ms. Moylanen answer the other question.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Ms. Moylanen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Pryor, for your question. That's right. We have mountains of evidence that show that increasing the price of cigarettes encourages smokers to quit and prevents youth from ever starting. Now, to be fair, we do not have that same level of evidence yet when it comes to devices and e-cigarettes. And so that is still a growing body of evidence that needs more exploration. But the evidence is undeniable when it comes to cigarette taxation and the impacts on youth initiation as well as cessation. Now, in terms of where Minnesota stands in terms of our nicotine solution or e-cigarette taxation system, we were one of the first, I think we were the first state in the country to tax e-cigarettes as tobacco products. And that was intentional. That was important to say, these should be taxed as a tobacco product. That came in 2010, I believe. Since then, other states, most other states, many of them have also started to tax e-cigarettes as tobacco products. Minnesota's tax rate on e-cigarettes remains one of the highest. However, we currently do not tax the device. And that's why this bill, as well as the governor's proposal and other bills that have been heard in the legislature over the past few years, have increased or included the device in the current tobacco product definition to be taxed.
Thank you, Ms. Moylanen. Okay, I don't see any members who've not yet had the opportunity to speak, so Representative Franson, you have an additional question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a kind of about the smuggling of cigarettes or going across the border. I am close to the border for those that want cigarettes, I guess, and or tobacco. So they go to Shooting Star Casino, which is maybe hour 45 minutes from where I reside. And people put in their orders, and the person will go purchase and bring back. So I don't think it's as exaggerated as some have alluded to with the quote-unquote smuggling. If somebody can get something for cheaper and they live near the border, that's where they're going to go. And then the next comment about what the bill author saying that if you tax tobacco, hopefully, I think she said something to the effect of hopefully it will make people quit. She also does support the taxing of marijuana or cannabis, as you call it. So that still doesn't make any sense, too. So if you're taxing cigarettes even higher than what they're already taxed now to make them, you know, the number one in the nation, but also support taxing cannabis, why even move to support legalizing cannabis? It's just interesting to me. That's all, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Schultz, looks like you're ready to say something.
Representative Franson, there's always trade-offs in life. And the trade-off between public health and decriminalizing cannabis, that's the point of legalizing cannabis because it's an equity issue. And the point of me supporting that is to talk about decriminalizing it and addressing equity.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Ackland, I see you've raised your hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I saw someone else's hand was up first. I wasn't quite ready, but that's okay. So as most of you know, I'm a registered nurse. And so the tobacco issue has long been in the forefront of many of the patients that I took care of. A lot of trouble with patients as a consequence of their smoking. A lot of difficulty. I used to teach the stop smoking cessation programs. So I understand the difficulties. My own father got addicted to cigarettes when they were in his rations in World War II. He never could stop. He died a horrible, horrible death from COPD. So I recognize and understand. My trouble is with the bill is the extreme amount of taxes that they feel will stop some of this, and it probably would stop some. I don't think it's the full answer. But when I see that we want to raise taxes to do more prevention, it seems like we're going about it the wrong way. So I just wanted to make a statement that I'm glad we've had this conversation. I think we need further conversations. I don't think this bill is trying to prevent a problem, but we're not getting to the root of the problem. So with that, that's all I need to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ackland. And just to note, testifiers generally shouldn't be speaking unless called on after the public testimony is closed. We go to member discussion, and then unless they're called on by a member, generally they won't be called on. That was just a comment about the other hand you saw raised.
Oh, okay. Thank you, sir.
Yep, no problem. No additional members have their hands raised. Representative Schultz, do you have any closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Chair Freiberg and members, for hearing the bill, and I urge your support for it. It is not the only solution that we have in our toolbox, but it's one that we should use. We need a multi-pronged approach to addressing smoking, and particularly vaping, among young adults and our youth. And this is one approach that has shown to be very, very effective. And in terms of businesses and retail, you know, we are going to be paying a higher price for smoking with higher healthcare costs. And that's a cost to employers in terms of their health insurance premiums and their own healthcare costs. So this is addressing a negative externality, and the biggest tool we have to address that is this tax. So I urge your support, and thank you for giving it a full hearing.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. With that, I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 1721 as amended to the Health, Finance, and Policy Division. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Bierman.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Akam.
Yes.
Representative Igbaje.
Yes.
Representative Ackland.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, yes.
Representative Franzen.
No.
Representative Heinzman.
No.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Pryor.
Yes.
Chair, you have 7-4.
Okay, motion passes. Thank you, Chair Schultz, for bringing your bill forward. The next item on the agenda is a discussion of House File 1307, Representative Edelson's bill. I just want to mention first, this is an informational hearing. We've been having a lot of discussions in the legislature about the hospitality industry, and I know a bill is moving through the Rules Committee right now to help them out as part of the pandemic. So I thought, out of an abundance of caution, I thought maybe this should be an informational hearing to start with so we could just identify some of the issues. I know Representative Edelson has done a great job working with the advocates on this and addressing their concerns. So I don't even know if that was really necessary to do, but I decided to do it, I guess. So, but I thought it's a really important bill, really important policy discussion, and I thought it was good to at least get the topic out there and find out hear from the public on it and hear what concerns are and what, you know, whether how people support it as well. So, Representative Edelson, welcome to the committee. Please discuss your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good to see you, members. House File 1307 is what we are calling the Healthy Kids Meal Bill. And what it does is it phases in a healthy beverage being offered at a restaurant in 2022, a healthy side in 2024, and a healthy meal in 2025. Can you guys hear me? Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. So we, as somebody that absolutely supports restaurants, we were trying to be cognizant of how to work with them on this. So we engaged Hospitality Minnesota right away. With that said, we have a bit of a public health crisis when it comes to the consumption of sugar that is consumed by our young people. Our 1 in 2 Minnesotan students have a sugary drink at least once a day. Students of color, youth of color, on average have almost 3. TV ads have been targeting young people at disproportional rates. And without action, there are projections that say 4 out of 10 children and young people today will likely develop type 2 diabetes. If you look in members' packets, there are numerous letters. There's a letter of support, but also there's a packet that shows 43 organizations that support this legislation. States like Delaware, California, and Hawaii have already adopted these measures. And what you see in members' packets or in the bill presented before you are recommendations that came from the RAND Corporation that was a study that was done that was funded by the National Institute of Health to look at how could we really start to tackle obesity and sugar consumption in America. With that said, I want to be cognizant of time and make sure that members have time to ask questions and get to my testifier. So, Mr. Chair, at this point, I would like to move to my first testifier.
Sure. The first testifier I have listed is Lucas Shostrom from the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. Is that your first testifier, Representative Edelson?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Okay. That is my first testimony.
Okay, just wanted to be sure. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shostrom. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee members transitioning here from computer to phone and didn't quite make it. Thought it'd be appropriate for this committee. Got the vaccine shots. So that's my excuse. But anyway, I am Lucas Shostrom, for the record, Executive Director of Minnesota Milk Producers Association. And on behalf of our organization, I'm here in support of this bill. This bill actually came as a result of Dairy Day at the Capitol, which is a once a year celebration we normally do at the Capitol. And of course, this year turned virtual, but it came from one of our members' ideas to do this healthy thing. It supports dairy farmers. It supports kids and lowers the amount of sugar, of course, that they would have involved. We're often asked on behalf of this bill in ag media, who have been extremely supportive, and amongst dairy farmers, you know, how much more milk sales would this result in? And that's, first of all, really hard to figure. And second, I think what we see out of it is the emotional boost that our state drink would be kind of exalted, and our kids would be healthier through this bill. I know we don't have much time, so I will sign off there, but just want to thank you for addressing this bill today and thank all of our partners in the health and medical industries for joining us with it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Shostrom. And I should have mentioned at the outset, we're asking testifiers to keep to 2 minutes on this as well. The next testifier I have is Dr. Sophie Ali. And after Dr. Ali will be Laura Perdue. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Ali. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi,
I am Dr. Sophia Ali. I am a family physician and I have a master's in public health. I've worked in community medicine in the Twin Cities for over 20 years. I'm a member of Minnesota Doctors for Health Equity, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Twin Cities Medical Society, which strongly supports House File 1307. I'm all too familiar with the devastating impact that sugary drinks have on health, including inflammation and diet-related diseases such as type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and some types of cancers. In addition, we've seen clearly that the patients with obesity and diseases related to poor diet, such as type 2 diabetes, have dramatically higher rates for hospitalization and death for COVID. While I strive to give my best care to my patients, there's only so much I can do in the exam room. In order to create a healthy and equitable state, we also need to support the support of communities. This bill is a critical tool that will support physicians and families in our work to build healthier futures for our children. The burden of diet-related diseases disproportionately falls upon low-income Minnesotans and Black, Indigenous, and other Minnesotans of color. This is no accident. The sugary drinks industry uses targeted marketing to sell their products to these communities. In fact, TV ads for sugary drinks targeting Black and Hispanic preschoolers, children, and teens rose dramatically from 2013 to 2018. MDH reports we are seeing alarming trends of sugary drink consumption among Minnesota's young people, and it's clear we need to do more to help today's kids grow to be healthy adults. I strongly support this bill both as a physician and as a parent. I know as a doctor and public health professional that changing the default kids' meal offerings to healthier options will positively impact what children are consuming. Every parent in the room knows how exhausting it can be to listen to the continual pleading for the sugary drink or the fries when eating out. It's important to make healthier options automatically available in restaurant settings, and doing so through House File 1307 will create healthier communities. This policy will make healthy choices so much easier for families and is a critical step toward addressing diet-related chronic illnesses and improving the health of our state. Indeed, other cities and states have shown that similar legislation works. Thank you, Chair Freiberg and committee members.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier who signed up is Laura Perdue, and after Ms. Perdue will be Tim Wilkin.
Chair Freiberg and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify before you on the issue of sugary drinks and Minnesota's children and youth. My name is Laura Perdue, and I'm the Nutrition Policy Coordinator with the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm also a registered dietitian nutritionist. The department has not taken a position on the legislation before you. However, I am here to testify about sugary drink consumption among youth in Minnesota and the troubling trend that currently exists in the state. Late last year, MDH released analysis of the approximately 170,000 youth in grades 5, 8, 9, and 11 who responded to the 2019 Minnesota Student Survey. Our analysis found that while on average Minnesota youth are having less sugary drinks than the national average, nearly half are still having sugary drinks at least once a day. Additionally, it found that there are significant disparities in how often students are having sugary drinks. I've submitted an in-depth data brief and an infographic on this analysis to the committee. Of note, among the findings are, on average, 46.1% of Minnesota students in grades 5, 8, 9, and 11 have sugary drinks at least once per day, and they have more sugary drinks as they get older. American Indian or Alaska Native, Black, African, or African American, and Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander students are approximately twice as likely to report having sugary drinks three or more times per day compared to the average for all students. Similarly, Hispanic or Latina students were nearly 50% more likely to report having sugary drinks three or more times per day compared to the average. Students who have been told they have prediabetes were two times more likely to report having sugary drinks three or more times per day compared to students without prediabetes. And finally, students whose families are experiencing economic hardships, such as going without food, reported having sugary drinks more often than their peers. Why are these findings troubling? Well, having just one sugary drink per day may not seem like a lot. It really is. Children who consume sugary drinks are at higher risk for obesity, cavities, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular complications. Having just one sugary drink per day increases a child's risk of becoming obese by 55%, which puts them at long-term risk for many serious and costly diet-related diseases and illness, including respiratory diseases such as COVID-19 and premature death. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier who signed up is Tim Wilkin, and after Tim Wilkin will be Ken Rockler. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Wilkin, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Tim Welkin, and I'm the president of the Minnesota Beverage Association, the trade group that represents the bottlers and distributors of non-alcoholic beverages, most of whom are family-owned businesses located right here in Minnesota. What most people don't realize is that calories consumed from beverages have been declining for some time. According to CDC researchers, added sugars consumed from sugar-sweetened beverages are actually down 35.9% from 1999 to 2014 among children and down 26% among adults, thanks in part to our industry's product innovation with more low and no calorie choices. In fact, in 2018, two-thirds of all new brands introduced were low sugar or zero sugar. In 2014, Coca-Cola, Keurig Dr. Pepper, and PepsiCo joined forces in a landmark agreement to decrease beverage calories in the American diet. Working alongside the Alliance for a Healthier Generation, the beverage industry set a goal to reduce beverage calories consumed per person nationally by 20%. We have seen significant declines 3 years running in calories from beverages nationally and in several communities where we're measuring progress. Our members are harnessing their innovation, their marketing, and distribution capabilities to bring consumers more choices, smaller portions, and less sugar. Their actions are actually having a real impact. Today, 53% of all beverages sold have zero sugar. Another program that we have is the School Beverage Guidelines, which were adopted back in 2004 in cooperation with the Alliance for a Healthier Generation to cut beverage calories shipped to schools. We had great success with this program, reducing calories in schools by 93% by 2010 by voluntarily removing full-calorie soft drinks and replacing them with low and no-calorie options, as well as smaller portion sizes. We appreciate that the bill ultimately maintains parental choice. We would prefer to see the bill include regular milks, 100% fruit and vegetable juices, and fruit and vegetable juice combined with water as part of the default beverage group. The beverage industry has had a long history of working with advocates and to come up with solutions on issues such as this, and we look forward to working with the advocates of this bill and the author. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. The final testifier who signed up is Ken Rockler. Welcome to the community. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. I see your name, Mr. Rockler. I don't know if you can hear us. Okay.
Right now, there we go.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Rockler, I now reside in St. Paul. My background was in the restaurant business, and we specialized in youth parties at one of the larger restaurants in Minnetonka. At the time, we would sometimes do a couple of hundred different parties a day. We had everything from girls softball to soccer to hockey. So I'm used to the idea of putting it out, and I'm also a big promoter of milk. But some of what's in here is just not functional, even for a large restaurant like that. Anybody that's been to a groom's dinner or a private party of any sort or organized one knows that when you have a large group, you don't get to order off the menu. Beforehand, you have to order and select out of two or three entrees, and they usually want to know exactly how many even beforehand. So even a place like ours that had a 5,000-square-foot kitchen and nine cooks working at one time would have had a hard time offering choices of vegetables. And we had all the vegetables there. I'm really here today representing the Bowling Proprietors Association because a number of those places don't even have the capacity to have vegetables, or they don't have the capacity to have milk. There's a change in the law, by the way, that would make milk more accessible to some of those centers, but not all. But this just really isn't functional for them to be able to have all of the choices that are being asked for here. I do believe that there's things that should be done. maybe to cut down on soda consumption, but I think that's probably more at the marketing end, not trying to handicap smaller restaurants. There's small bowling centers that don't even have the capacity to serve frozen pizza. They have to have pizza brought in, or they'll allow food to be brought in from McDonald's. So I'm not against the idea. I just don't believe it's functional. I will like to hear some information from the author who said that this was already doing going on in California, Hawaii, and Delaware. I'd like to hear how it's going there, and I guess I can check through the national organization how they're complying. It's just hard for me to imagine with my 40 years in the business how it would really function. That's the end of my testimony. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to give me a call.
Thank you for your testimony. That is all the people who have signed up. Is there any member discussion? Representative Pryor, then Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to learn more from Ms. Perdue about the consumption of sugary drink and the surveys that have been done for youth. And this is just like a basic understanding question. Is chocolate milk a sugary drink or not? Because I know my grandkids, they always choose chocolate milk over regular milk.
Ms. Perdue.
Yes, so we do consider it a sugary drink. It does have added sugar to it. So while milk has naturally occurring sugar for the flavored beverages, chocolate milk, strawberry milk, those types of things, it is a sugary beverage.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, if I could ask again. So also, and this is kind of, you know, another level of understanding. You know, we heard reference to adults using, or the idea that you can have zero calorie soft drinks. But then I know that just, you know, reading in the popular press, you know, there's some concerns that those are not actually, aren't necessarily a healthy substitute. So is there any research now with children about, you know, a low-calorie sugar substitute type beverages and what effects that has for health and diabetes and prediabetes for children?
Ms. Perdue.
There's not as much research available out that. I think part of the reason to really promote milk and water is, and milk in particular provides a lot of nutrients, calcium, that's really important for growing children. So I think that some of the research I have seen when children are drinking other beverages is it's replacing their intake of milk, and then they're getting less calcium and not meeting their nutrient needs.
Representative Pryor, looks okay. Representative Grunhagen, then Representative Bierman.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, this is a question for the author. You know, we're already have hammered the restaurants with the COVID shutdowns, especially those areas. So it just, you know, it seems that we're going after them again here. But the question is, what is going to stop restaurants from just no longer including beverages with children's meals in order to avoid the regulations?
Representative Ailes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen. Water would always be included. I know several restaurant owners. And to be clear, I am a huge supporter of the restaurant industry and have been this entire year, which has been hard, which is why we're doing informational hearing and which is why we have step-ins 2022, 2024, 2025. But I will be clear that this is costing Minnesotans $3 billion a year already in terms of diet-related chronic illnesses. So, you know, we have to start looking at these things in a different way. Because we're bringing this bill does not mean that we do not support restaurants.
Now, Mr. Chair.
Proceed, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for that response, Representative Elderson. The other thing is, according to some information I have here, is 600 calories per meal sufficient for all children? The NIH says very active 9 to 13 year old boys need an estimated 2,000 to 2,600 calories per day. You know, especially if you're playing sports, I'm sure that applies to a lot of girls too. So appreciate a response on that, Representative.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to, for clarification, Representative Gruenhagen, there's so many acronyms. Do you mean the National Institute of Health?
Representative Gruenhagen.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Edelson.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, Representative Gruenhagen, the suggestions that are contained within this bill actually come from research that was funded by the National Institute of Health. But we do have a pediatrician, I believe, that testified, and she may be able to answer a little bit with more clarity on that.
Dr. Ali, I think that might have been you.
Hi, yes. So I am a family physician, but I do see kids, of course. Two things. One is that very active children are not the norm in this state, in this day and age. So yes, there are kids who are playing sports, who are using a lot of calories, and we can supplement that with snacks and other healthy options. The way to supplement that is not with every children's meal all across the state. In answer to, if I may, to Representative Pryor's question about the no sugar beverages, there's some interesting research that says that the diet beverages are actually triggering the same sugar cravings and actually lead people to crave sugar and carbohydrates. So while there are not those calories and the sugar in those beverages, they're still activating the same section of the brain that is addictive, that is addicted to sugar. And there's plenty of research from UCSF that sugar is toxic. And they've taken kids and just for 10 days cut out sugary beverages and highly processed foods and been able to show on CT scans changes in internal fat on internal organs. It's very compelling research. Sugar is toxic, and I 100% support this bill. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Dr. Ali. Representative Gruenhagen,
Yeah, I got one more quick question. Have any other states implemented a bill like this? And if so, what are the results?
Representative Edelson, I believe, mentioned the states briefly. I believe it was Hawaii, California, and Delaware. Do you have any data, Representative Edelson, from those states? If you could keep it quick, I do have two members who have raised their hands, and we need to be done by noon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gruenhagen, we can get any results on that, but Hawaii and Delaware passed this legislation in 2019 and California in 2018. So we will see if there's any results as to those passages.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. We can, you can send those to our committee administrator and we can share them with the committee members. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question is for Dr. Ali again. I want to thank her for her comments that she just made about the fact that kids are so much less active right now than they used to be, and the food that they're eating is not as healthy for them. But my question for her is, well, twofold. One, when you're seeing patients, everybody you see, do you bring in the importance of good news in your consults with both the kids themselves and parents?
Dr. Ali.
Thank you for that question. Yes, I do. I will say that the current medical system does not support patient education and prevention. We get 20 minutes a visit to deal with all sorts of diseases, and the money is on prevention. So yes, I do. I address it at Well Child Checks. Most of my colleagues do, but most clinics don't have a nutritionist available. Many parents are completely overwhelmed by all of the information that they get in the public media, in advertising, and have no idea how to make healthy choices. The juice industry has lobbied heavily to have juice be a healthy beverage, but it is sugar and it's leading to diabetes as well. So our parents and our families are swimming upstream in a river of misinformation and partial information. And we try to address that in the clinic, but in the 20-minute clinic visit where you've got to do the whole exam, address any issues, find out how school is going, give vaccines, it's not enough. And so having systemic controls such as healthy options just be the norm in restaurants will make a huge difference, in my opinion.
Thank you. Representative Bierman, very quick. I've been told we need to end very soon just so that House information can get ready for session.
Okay. I just had one question for Ms. Perdue from MDH. She listed all of the issues with the sugary drinks that kids are eating and the diabetes, cardiovascular going, weight gain going up, all of these issues. Can you tell me why there's no policy position on this bill from the Minnesota Department of Health when the effects seem to be quite positive?
Ms. Perdue, very quickly.
I don't think I'm in a position to speak for to answer that. I know that we're trying to remain neutral just because it's not something we've had a chance to fully take a look at.
Understand. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the author for bringing this bill forward. I support this 100%. It's about healthy eating and nutrition that we need to teach kids more about in school. And all of us, you know, we need to learn. When we're leading the world in obesity, diabetes, and heart disease, it's because of our diet. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quick. So I find this whole conversation very interesting, and I wish this committee would have spent more time on these type of issues. As a matter of fact, I think health is wealth, and without our health, we really don't have much in this world. But with that said, why are we going after the restaurant industry here? The majority of families are not eating 24/7 at a restaurant. And most of those meals are taking place in their own home, friends, family, that type of environment. So what kind of effect? I would think it would be slim to none at the restaurant industry level.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Franson. I agree that our health is so incredibly important. So data shows that when we go out and we dine out, and I can verify this because of my own experience, we consume more sugar, more calories, we consume more sugary drinks. And so that is one of the reasons we have taken this angle. So, you know, I guess that covers that part of it. And I think it's important to look when we do that, what are those long-term impacts? And also when you're going through the drive-through at McDonald's for a family that's very busy, what is the first thing that's offered to you? I think that helps us create better habits and better choices. We all have very busy lives.
Representative Franson, very briefly, and then we will need to stop. You are muted.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Thank you for your comments. You know, if I am going to fast food, which I probably don't do very often because that's just not what I like to feed my family, but I'm not being offered. The menu choices are clearly right there on that menu, and I, as the parent, make that decision with the family. Just my two cents.
Thank you, Representative Franson. Representative Edelson, any brief closing statements you'd like to make?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill does not remove parental choice. This bill is about trying to acknowledge the fact that the sugar is harmful for our bodies. It is harmful for our youth, and it is making us sick. It is costing our state and Minnesotans a great deal in terms of our health care costs. And so I thank everybody for the support. I thank everybody for the discussion. I really appreciated hearing everybody's perspective and would love if anybody had any opposition or concerns to please follow up with me offline. I really do want this to be a community bill that we can all contribute to.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. I appreciate you bringing this before us. It is a very important topic. We have no further business before the committee. So with that, we are adjourned.